And now your speaker is David Hayes Profater.
Dealing as we are today on a word fitly spoken with the topic of preaching, both generally and as a matter of worship, we'll be considering some questions today on the inquiry feature concerning various approaches on that subject. Here's a question posed by someone whom I imagine is worried about whether the church is fulfilling the crux of its mission. Can a congregation become so involved in so many things that it is actually hindered from preaching the gospel? Without batting an eye, I would quickly say the answer to that question is yes. The congregations of the Lord's church do often get involved in so many things that the actual publicity of the gospel is stymied. There are any of a number of examples that could be cited, but we'll number just a few and then move ahead. I believe the visitation of those who are sick is an important thing to do, and certainly a gesture that is appreciated by those whose health has failed, either temporarily or permanently. The importance of the visiting of the sick is emphasized by the text of Matthew 25, where the Lord pointed out that the visiting of the sick of the brotherhood will be among the criteria of judgment. However, suppose all the time of a gospel preacher or any Christian was consumed with the visiting of the sick. There wouldn't be much, if any, attention given to other important functions, would there? While all Christians are to bear fruit after their own kind, that is, produce more Christians, according to John 15, in order to be pleasing in the sight of God, were any Christian to commit the whole of his service to the visiting of the sick, he'd really be failing to fulfill God's mandates for him. There have been times when, after observing the schedule and itinerary of some gospel preachers, I've wondered when they found time to be gospel preachers or prepare for the preaching that they are responsible to do. Moving to another example, congregation-wide projects can provide a good service to the brethren and the community as a whole, but sometimes fail, again, to emphasize the real task at hand. Efforts such as bus programs, benevolent projects, and structured fellowships are all good things. However, if removed from their context, or if found lacking a theme centered around Christian growth and evangelism, they become empty so far as spiritual purpose is concerned, and become such as would keep us busy indeed, but not really accomplishing anything. Here's another question that appears to come from someone concerned as to whether preaching is reaching its goal. Why do preachers give the invitation without first explaining the gospel? Well, the invitation, as we call it, is an opportunity afforded during the worship for anyone desiring to do so to be baptized into Christ, or for Christians to seek forgiveness of sins through confession and prayer, although such things can be accomplished at virtually any time. However, if there is ever any reason for a gospel preacher to climax his lesson with an invitation without at first explaining what it is the attendance is being invited to do, it may be because, from his vantage point in the pulpit, he can see and recognize whether there is anyone present who may need the gospel explained. Particularly if a preacher has been with a congregation for a number of years and is well familiar with those there, he can quickly spot a visitor and just as quickly determine whether everyone there is a regular. Determining this, he is able to discern whether an explanation of the basic gospel is warranted because of the presence of someone outside the brotherhood, or unwarranted because of the presence of folks who altogether fully understand such rudiments. While all this is true, ministers may at times get so caught up in the process of feeding the church that they may neglect to teach the first principles of Christianity. It's in order to remember that these items do deserve attention, and though most of the audience in worship services at any time is familiar with these, they need not ever be forgotten, whether for the sake of outsiders who may wish to come in or youngsters being reared up in the church who need to know how to obey the gospel. Finally, someone writes, in view of the widespread sexual immorality today, is it in order to ask, in the first place, is the church doing its job? And are preachers preaching against it as they once were? In reality, this is a question that can't be answered either affirmatively or negatively in either of its parts, and should be answered in such a manner as to be universally true and fair to all those concerned. This is because there are some preachers who do still deal with the real spiritual issues facing us today, while there are others who do not. When we regard whether the church is doing its job, it's important that we realize that the church is an inclusive word with reference to every member thereof. Preachers can condemn any form of immorality they wish as often as they wish, but until such a matter is effectively dealt with in the home, there is a decided handicap placed against the preacher's efforts. Because of an almost universal acceptance of immorality by people both in and out of the church by means of television and movies, young and old alike are quickly losing their consciousness of just what separation they should have from such things. If we know in our own honest heart that what we see on television or at the movie theater, as well as what we hear, will be wrong for us to say or do personally, and if parents know they couldn't realistically condone those activities depicted on the screen for their own children, then certainly it should be realized that such is wrong to accept as entertainment. And again, as we have explored at the outset of today's program, and will examine again at the climax, when preachers get away from their golden tongue poetry and get back to the scriptures, we may see things turn around.